for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the show today. Now, we've been building up and building up to Brazil. State capture. What does it mean for Brazil? What does it mean for the world? And we've shown how the banks are sitting behind it, causing countries to rise when they want them to rise so they can either get the governments to cooperate and slowly just take the country back down and take all the money, or actually crash them. But how do they do it? Now, you hear the term information operations quite a lot. I popularized that through articles I've written. But what does it mean? Is it a software? Well, if you look back to 2016, you heard of Cambridge Analytica, the Trump campaign, and honestly, that was set up to fail just to get the headlines and make them look bad. And the reason I know this is because the parent company actually set it up that way. They didn't give Cambridge any of the actual working pieces. What are the working pieces? SCL, Strategic Communications Laboratories, was the only DARPA certified information operations programming in the world that ever existed. And IOTA Global, they use IOTA Global's methodology. Okay, it was a sub company. They were the only company to ever need to be licensed militarily to do that. Means they could actually drop boots on the ground with machine guns if things weren't working out well. Now, really think about that. These are people that do black PR. They do what's known as black PR. So how does it work? Well, it wasn't designed by software or network engineers. We'll start with that. Any programming or software or anything like that you hear about that was, doesn't work. It was designed by the world's most recognized military information operations and influence professionals. And they're backed by proven social and behavioral scientists who provide capability transfer to military clients globally. Their members have commanded info ops and psyops units on operations. They wrote NATO and national doctrines worldwide. This is in the US, in Europe, etc. They lecture in the world's defense academies and teamed with some of the leading behavioral scientists in the field. There simply was no other organization or is that has that experience and knowledge. This programming, and programming what I'm talking about, is like a psychologist reprograms your mind, because that's essentially what they're after. It doesn't just rely on social communities. Now, if you looked at the dashboard of their software, which is essentially to do research from, their form of emotional programming has the ability to target groups at infinitely precise levels, which means each small subgroup within a community can be targeted through information operations. Well, what's a community? We're all online, right? Well, they can do it geographically. Imagine they target a neighborhood and they're looking for people that are afraid to lose their jobs, vote Democratic, cheat on their wives, and like cats, they'll have it there. They can actually define it so precise, what they're looking for, in precise locations, that they'll get that. Now, the next thing they look at is, what are these people, where do they get their news from? And they'll have that. Now, they set the parameters, adjustments for research, and that opens up new groups and opportunities across multiple communities in the networks that these people are in on social media, which means they know where their messaging will go when they actually do it. what this does, because they know what people, where they're watching videos, where they're watching news, where they're reading news or listening to news, they can insert media actively and aggressively because it's geared to create a strong emotional response because they've already built out the psychological parameters of these people within those sections of any community on the planet. Now, they're not looking to inform you. They're looking to change your psyche, and that's what they do. And I've got news for you. The smarter you are, the easier it is to do this to you. The reason is because they blanket all the media that you're looking at. It's coming in from all sides. If everybody's saying the same thing and there's no one really visible, there's no real visible people talking about anything different, they got you. Now, the strength of doing this is to be able to channel multiple subgroups simultaneously with different and even opposing fears and hopes into a single whole based on emotional values. So, you know, you could take tree huggers on one hand, white nationalists on the other one, find out a common fear that they have, because this works best on negative emotions, what you fear and what you hate. If you hate injustice and they want to move you towards something unjust, they find out something you hate and they pin that on their target. And that's what happened. That's what happened with Donald Trump from 2016 to a lot of people, to people on Twitter, to just, it goes on and on and on. Easiest way to get rid of somebody, call them a Russian troll, throw it away. By flooding the subgroups with custom messaging, they create a single common enemy to your security, your welfare, even your sense of patriotism. And it's not difficult to funnel masses of people into the streets using memes, narratives, without ever presenting a single shred of evidence to back it up. Like I said, if you're reading MSNBC, NBC, CBS, ABC, etc., even Fox quite a bit because they are involved with this at different levels, everybody gets the same message. Everybody has the same enemy. Everybody has the same goal to fix the problem. You see, that's how information operations work. It's not just looking at the emoji you put on your Facebook post. It's changing it. And it's doing it by understanding you psychologically at a level that they can move you. Ultimately, it's to move the leader of a political group, a country, etc., to make mistakes. That's going on a lot right now. We've seen 6 years of this. 6 years. This is what's been going on. Now, you've got this definition in 10 minutes. And this is the reality of it. Because right now, today, in 2023, this program I just described is the only one that works. Now, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with D.D. Denslow. Don't miss out on a thing if you want to hear the truth on TNT Radio. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. It's available right now to download. We're keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
The stories affecting you.
They cover the important stories.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
With me now is TNT host and producer D.D. Denslow. D.D., welcome and thanks for coming on today.
Hi, George. How are you, mate? You good?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. What's going on in the world today outside of Ukraine?
Yeah, this story, it seems that there is maybe some turmoil. Maybe the fractures, the cracks are splitting in NATO. Turkish opposition backs exit from NATO is being reported today. Turks increasingly perceive the US as a threat and Russia as a friend. Vice chair of Vatan Party, Ethan Sankuk, argues Turkey could leave NATO within months, a politician there has claimed, citing provocations by the US-led military bloc against his nation. Ethan Sankuk is a Turkish businessman of Arab descent who is active in politics and who local media describe as a close friend to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. He was coming on an anti-NATO campaign in Turkey that the Vatan, also known in English as the Patriotic Party, where he holds the position of vice chairman for foreign relations, has organized. NATO forces us to take these actions with their provocations, he stated, predicting that his party's goal of getting Turkey to leave the alliance may come to fruition as soon as 5 to 6 months' time. Speaking to the news website Inbursa.com on Tuesday, Sankuk noted that being part of the bloc puts Turkey on a collision course with fellow members and longtime rival Greece, and also at risk of being pulled into a whirlpool in the Middle East. The recent Koran burning stunts in some European nations make leaving NATO a necessity, argued. And he's referring to the Swedish, Danish-Swedish right-wing politician and activist Rasmus Paludan, who staged a protest last weekend in front of the Turkish embassy in Stockholm, where he burnt some Korans. Sankuk said the Turks are increasingly perceiving the US as a nation that pursues the most hostile and destructive policies. At the same time, they feel great sympathy towards Russia. So Turkey, if there was anyone in NATO who would not align with the anti-Russian, pro-Ukrainian narrative, it was going to be Turkey. Turkey is also the gateway to the East from Europe. So it actually is strategically very, very important. And we already know that Erdogan and Putin are fairly friendly, George. So, rumors are, the murmurs are that Turkey, maybe as soon as 5 to 6 months, as this Turkish politician has stated, may decide to leave the NATO club.
Well, I know Turkey, I mean, it's a big gas hub for transit gas that's coming out of the Adriatic. But it's also, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Turkey gets all of its gas for use from Russia. They're mm-hmm. on cheap gas. And quite frankly, if they were to get it from next door, the gas prices would double. Mm-hmm. It's a lot cheaper to actually get it from Russia. So they actually have a normal economy in this global mess that Biden and Zelensky created with gas pricing. The other thing, you know, they've been a problem with the overflights when we were going to, the U.S. was going to war in Afghanistan, Iraq. It's been going on for quite a long time. So they've always been their own player. Now, do you think that a lot of this could be based on just economics, beyond a Swede burning a Koran in Stockholm? Do you think it's just basic self-survival, self-preservation?
I think it would more likely be an act of self-preservation, one. Two, burning Korans does no one any favors. I'm not a big fan of Islam or the Islamic ideology in religion. I think it's a bit backwards. That's just my opinion. However, insulting them by burning their religious book, I'm pretty sure their Christians would be quite offended if people started burning Bibles. Yes, we treat it and take the right act on it in a different way, but we know that in Islamic countries,
burning the Quran can be decisive in decision making of the people that you're offending. And then thirdly, I think there might be a lot of public pressure from the Turkish public. A pollster, Gezeki, at the end of last year showed that 72.8% of Turks wanted their nation to have good relations with Russia. Less than a quarter said they believed Moscow to be hostile towards Turkey. And you could sort of flip that round and you might well say, mm-hmm. well, that's sort of 20-30% of people don't want good relations with USA, because it is effectively a binary choice. And with that in mind, gas prices, and hey, other members of this NATO club are burning our religious book. You can see now that Turkey, they may well say, we've had enough. We don't need you. You're trying to bring Sweden in. They're burning our Quran. We're going to side with Russia. And then all of a sudden, that big strategic country that is sort of tied to Russia and has a sort of gateway through to the Middle East and to the East, that's gone for NATO and it's gone for the USA, and it will prevent problems in the future with this conflict in Ukraine, George.
I think that that's really well said. And what you said about the Quran, yeah, it's apropos. Oh. It's exactly right. You need to respect other people's religions. And that's just, yeah, especially politicians. I can't imagine a stupider scenario. So what you said is exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily like saying it. I'm not a fan of the Islamic ideology. I think it presents a lot of problems, and it brings a lot of problems into my country in the UK. But going and fanning the flames of fire that are coming out of their religious book doesn't help anything. Mm-hmm. It doesn't solve anything. And hey, Erdogan might go, do you know what? That was the decisive thing that makes me want to leave NATO. It could be that one stupid act, just one burning book that makes Turkey leave NATO. And hey, that could be the card that collapses that whole tower of cards. That really, that's all NATO is. So, if one leaves, others might start leaving, and then that whole block falls apart.
Really well said, Didi. Thank you for coming by today. And will I see you now? It's tomorrow, or which day are you?
I'm traveling up to, I've got to do a plug. I'm traveling up to an event in Kegworth, me and Locked and Loaded host Rick Munn. We should be on the stage. We're going to be doing a live question and answer, a live podcast for the audience there. So I won't be here delivering a news story to you tomorrow, George, but I will be back on Monday.
What time will you be on the stage? Let's promote this thing. What time will you be on?
Yeah, I actually don't know, but the event is from about 6-7 o'clock tomorrow evening, and it lasts all weekend. It is on the TNT event calendar, so you can go on there. There may be some tickets still available, and I'm sure if you turned up on the night, they would let you in if you pass them a bit of your hard-earned cash. So it will be on Friday night that me and Rick are doing our bit, because I have to travel back to Plymouth on Saturday. But the exact time that we are on stage, I don't know yet, George.
All right. Have a great weekend. And
you, George.
Have a great show with that. And we'll see you Monday, Didi.
Cheers.
Cheers. All right, we're going to take a quick break. That was TNT host and producer Didi Denslow, and we actually got a lot of good information about what's going on in Turkey, and quite frankly, things are shaping up. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to Brazil again.
You should hear what Hesher, CeCe, and John are talking about on State of the Nation.
The FAA reveals what caused the computer outage, prompting that big ground stop, right? It disrupted more than 11,000 flights. A preliminary review found contract personnel unintentionally deleted files, disrupting a key computer system on January 11. Computer systems, they have their little glitches, they have their failures, you know, but this kind of thing is not good.
I am not a big fan of what's going on at the FAA, as you well know, and I have been reporting on the nominee that Biden has still refused to replace, even though he is so not even remotely able to handle situations like this. He's just inexperienced, highly inexperienced, and he is just riddled with all kinds of dirty doings in his past and present. But as far as the FAA goes, they've been unmanned since 2022, basically. No real leadership there on top of the antiquated systems that they have.
State of the Nation on TNT Radio.
Imagine being invisible. You could mess with someone's mind, sneak up on them, and they wouldn't know you're there. Even scare them to death. When you speed on our roads, that's what happens. Because no one sees you coming. Think road safety. A message from the government of South Australia.
The FBI is orchestrating plots, riots, and massacres in an attempt to justify the nullification of your constitutional rights. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, we're back and we're going to Brazil. Now, in 2003, Lula da Silva gets elected. And Lula, who doesn't even really have a high school education, sweeps politics in Brazil. He's a labor leader. And from 2003 to 2010, Lula becomes the biggest graft magnet in the freaking world. Right away, his country is going south. It is in the hands of the It's in the hands of the banks. He doesn't know what to do. Well, guess who hops in right away? Matthew Pigassi and Lazard Asset Management. And they say, hey, Lula baby, you're a socialist. We're a socialist. Hey, we'll come in. We'll fix this thing up. We'll make you an example for everybody around the world. And Lula goes, really? Okay. So what they did within a few years was actually clean up Brazil's debt. And it happened so fast, the entire world took notice. Yeah, they can actually do this thing for countries that are in major debt. Okay? That could actually be done, but it's not the preferred method of, you know, when you want to steal stuff. So what they did in South America was take Brazil, make it a shining example. So all the other countries will look around and say, wow, we have debt too. Maybe they can help us out. Because in Venezuela, under Chavez was elected a few years earlier than this, and Lazard was there, but Chavez kind of kept him to the side. Believe it or not, Che Guevara's cousin was in charge of the economy in Venezuela. It's a fact, seriously. And he did not like these French bankers at all. He said, one, they're fake communists, man. They're not socialists. What are these aren't our people. Well, Chavez kept him to the side, but Pigassi brought in his guys. And, you know, we've talked over a few shows, Max Alvarez, who became a movie producer, Fernando Sulichin, he brought him in and Chavez was starstruck. He was going to do Hollywood South America. I mean, he was funding actors and projects and such because he wanted good publicity for the country. Well, they started winding their way into the government. Now, all of this started to really crystallize in and around 2007. Pigassi's guy, Arvelez, he goes from being a big advisor to Chavez opening up government officials to graft, to becoming the ambassador to Brazil, where he opens up the graft. Lula was so primed all this time that they were setting up, they spent 2003 onward setting up the graft mechanisms where I've already talked about the giant multinational construction companies. I mean, can you imagine you lose $300 million and where'd it go? I don't know. I had it in my pocket. I went golfing. It's gone. What do you want me to tell you? Lost it. That's literally, I mean, they didn't come up with any better answers than that. Actually, that was a better answer than what they were coming up with when they were actually caught. I don't know where it went. So they're handing out bribes all across these governments, across South America, from 2007 through 2014. And by 2007, Chavez was starting to trust this guy and listen to him, Pagassi. And what Pagassi wanted to do was get into Brazil, to Venezuela, because honestly, that's where the big bucks were. Those were the big piggy banks. I mean, you know, the country buys out Citgo, nationalizes it, right? The energy operation, the U.S. bought 10% of its petroleum reserves from, guess where? Venezuela, because their refineries are set up for a specific weight and type of petroleum. And two countries have it, Venezuela and Russia. Which is interesting because after all the sanctions and stopping Nord Stream and all that, the U.S. doubled up, well, actually quadrupled its purchases of Russian oil. Go figure, under Biden. Now, anyway, so you've got this big mess brewing. And now they're heading into the 2012 elections. Well, Chavez is going to be elected again. Pagassi says, hey, we'll bring in my buddies at Bell Pottinger. They'll come in, they'll do the media for you. Well, Bell Pottinger is an information, one of the original working information operations companies worldwide, and one of the blackest. I mean, they work for everybody. No one else had worked for it because Pagassi took them there. It was Pagassi and Dominique Strauss-Kahn. So we go through first before the election, 2011. Now, Pagassi's already got Argentina in his hand. We've already discussed that. It happened through his producer guy, Fernando Sulichin, who buddy-buddied up to the Kirchners, and Pagassi went right in. Lazard ended up taking over the economics and financial structure of Argentina. They get together with Lula. They both go to Chavez and say, hey, Hugo, we want Dominique Strauss-Kahn to head the International Money Fund. What do you think? And Hugo goes, I don't know about this guy. He says, come on, you're our friend. Help us out. He's helping all of us out. Matthew Pagassi's helping us. Well, okay. Strauss-Kahn gets it. So now they're dealing debt worldwide. Strauss-Kahn is using the position to open doors for Pagassi in Greece, South Africa, all over the place. When Pagassi wanted to go to South Africa in early 2016, Dominique Strauss-Kahn opened a door. The country was already captured by the Gupta brothers. Pagassi, never one to miss a deal, jumped in. Big on debt, big on energy. Ba, 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 bing. Only that one was caught. And luckily for South Africans, because what they did was turn the majority of population against the minority of the population violently. How's that for shits and giggles? Turn one section of the population against the other violently. Does this sound familiar? Or have you ever heard of Minneapolis, maybe Atlanta? Think about it. Because I've got news for you. This is the type of work they do. This is the type of work they did. This is the type of work they're doing. Yeah. So back to Brazil. So we've got Pegassi's guy as the ambassador in Brazil. And he's opening up these major conduits. Now, let's not think about it as graft anymore. Because it's not graft in a sense that like, I stole $1 billion, now I can go to Disney World. It's not like that. Think about these countries now conduits of wealth. This missing money didn't end up in somebody's bank account. Where did it go? It went to other projects. Went offshore, got cleaned up, went to other projects. And that's globalization. You know, you've got George Soros behind all this stuff. Well, it's his organizations and yes, some of his money. But, you know, pound for pound, he's not putting that much into it. It's coming from other places too that are supporting it. And you've got to look at it that way. One man cannot do this on his own, no matter how evil that boy is. It just doesn't work. But when you take the wealth of a country and put it behind something, now really think about that one. They did that in Ukraine. They're doing that in Ukraine again. Where do you think all this money's going to? Honestly, seriously, do you think that in 1 year, Ukraine could spend 2 times the entire Russian military budget, be able to steal 500 tanks from Russia in the war, at least that's what they're saying, and still need more if they're winning? The money's being siphoned off. Not all of it can go into anyone's account. Now, what they're getting with all this graft that's up in the news right now, kids, that's just a small part of what's going on. It's such a tiny sliver, it's not funny. When you get into tens of billions of dollars that fast, one, it's very, very hard to move unless you've already got the conduit set up. So it has to go into something. Now, since it keeps getting lost, we don't have any world's biggest billionaires coming out of Ukraine right now. I mean, you have new billionaires, yeah, like Zelensky. But they're setting up these projects for globalization require a lot of funds. And these information operations, the one in Venezuela was $200 million for 1 year. And I've already told you that company never had more than $57,000 in their bank account. Where's it going? Now, the whole time Lula is in the president's seat, he is not just aware of this, he's part of this. Pegassi is his good buddy. They're going places. Now, all of a sudden, Chavez gets cancer after he wins the election, and Maduro takes over. Now, Maduro approved the sale of the big oppositional news media in Venezuela to an outsider, which was basically unconstitutional. Guess who ended up owning it? Strategic Communications Laboratories, through their company at Cambridge Analytica. It was their first job. Yeah, and then they sold it illegally. If you look on the board of directors list for Cambridge Analytica, it's a guy that worked for Matthew Pegassi. So it's very, very small groups, and you don't want tons of people knowing about what's going on. You know, honestly, what good is a criminal conspiracy if people talk about it or find out about it easily? All right? You know, so the fewer people that know about it, the less you're paying out to keep it quiet. Now, Max Arvelez was actually caught in this in a criminal investigation. They started investigating Lula da Silva for massive corruption across 9 countries. It deposed him. Well, he was already out of office, his successor, Rousseff, and all across South America, these leaders fell. What was the reason why? They'd already destroyed Brazil. They've already taken it down. You had these massive companies. They took them down. Owners of the head of the boards were put in jail, committed suicide like Jeffrey Epstein. Real nice little easy cleanup there. Matthew Pagassi was figured out in Venezuela. And now I'm not a fan of Maduro at all. But this guy looked at what was going on, and to the degree he was part of it, because honestly, you don't need to, you know, you have someone that's part of something, you only tell them what they need to know. Okay, we're talking global operations here. We're not talking about, you know, giving $50 to the zoning board or something like that. But then the losses started coming in. And in 2014, when it became clear, 2014, 2015, Maduro woke up one morning and got the news that, hey, El Presidente, like $11 billion is missing. Yeah, that's beyond the other money we don't, you know, we never accounted for because we're a rich oil country. So, but we know $11 billion is missing. And he went, what? Where'd it go? Well, we don't know. But Matthew Pagassi is on the board of directors of that company, so you should ask him. Yeah, literally, right? Literally, right? He's in charge of the money. He's also in charge of the economy and finances of Venezuela, and he tanked them hard. He set it up to fail. Why? Because he knew one thing. Maduro was going to get up one morning, and Maduro was going to kick him out of Venezuela if he didn't kill him. Guess what Maduro did? Maduro woke up after he found out that, hey, our country's wealth, and hey, guess what? The stocks and the minerals, energy and everything like that belong to somebody else. Our future wealth is gone. And we never diversified because the guy in charge of the economy, which was Pagassi, didn't prioritize it. In fact, he retarded it. Bada bing, bada boom. So the next thing you know, and the next thing you hear about Venezuela is Juan Guaido. Well, whose candidate was he? The last thing SCL said when Matthew Pagassi got kicked out of Venezuela is, next election we're replacing Maduro. And of course you had the whole election thing in the United States, and they chose to sacrifice that company for that project. Now, you have all of that happens. Maduro's Venezuela, it turns into the biggest cesspit in South America. The country is collapsed, fighting it out, trying to survive it. I have a bit of respect for Maduro because of that. Now, I'm not a socialist by any means. And instead of letting globalists take over his country, it went beyond just somebody clinging to power. He's the only person there that has the clout to try to get them through it. And I think that's actually part of it. So we'll see what happens. Now, after that, right after that, we have the beginning of the whole Russian narrative at the same time. See, SEO went out of there and they actually got a new contract in Ukraine at the beginning of 2015. They wrote the information policy for Ukraine, which included the takeover of media and the branding of Russian trolls, identifying and branding Russian trolls. And now we're talking about that programming that I laid out at the beginning of the show. They identified their biggest media audience, their biggest target. It wasn't in Ukraine. It was the U.S. You see, the money and the support had to come from the U.S. Therefore, they needed to keep the Democrats in power. Therefore, Hillary Clinton needed to get elected. So 2015, 2016, Ukraine went quiet all of a sudden. And all the news focused on the election. And guess what? The Ukrainians were working diligently on it. And Alexander Chalupa actually talked about it quite a bit openly, and so did Andrea Chalupa. Ukraine was a testing ground, a laboratory to figure out what they could do for the election. And this is what they were talking about. Information operations that Barack Obama legalized. This is a weapon of war. A president of the United States legalized using it against his own country. And Europe picked right up on it. Why would Britain, why would the UK want to be caught in such a mess? Because if the US had a real president at that time and they knew about it, they could say it's actually military action from the UK against them. Well, see, the UK had this thing, fantasy about a global Britain campaign and anything that made the UK look powerful, magical, or wonderful. Oh my gosh, they were behind it. And they actually talked about these things in Parliament. That's crazy, right? Now, ask yourself, where have you heard about these things before? And there are the crickets again. Big media should know about this. Well, they do. They're part of it. The way they actually got that narrative to work and the way they got the Venezuela stuff to work and the Ukraine stuff to work and, oh gosh, pick a one. Taiwan, we'll get that to work. Pick a country you just don't like. We'll get that to work too. They go through the State Department. Now, I discussed this early on, the first Wednesday that we were looking into this. The BBG, which is now the USAGM, it was the Board of Broadcasting Governors, allowed this contractor, military contractor, to guide what they were doing, to tell them what to do. And they did that the whole time. The BBG, the power of this outfit that you never even heard of, and why would you, other than RFERL, you know that, Radio Liberty, right? That's them. Here's the thing. It's kind of like an ambassadorship for network heads. And they take it very seriously. Very, very seriously. And if you go against the BBG, they'll kick you out of DC. You don't have access anymore. And that's the reality too. So when SEL and IOTA Global were saying, okay, here's the narrative. This is what we want to get out across all channels. They were doing for the first time what's known as whole nation information operations. That meant all 17 intelligence agencies were on board. U.S. Congress was on board because it supported Ukraine. The administration was firmly behind it, Joe Biden, which honestly, this gave him the green light for Burisma. Wow, we're doing this, so I want this. Makes sense to you now? It's policy. Why would I get caught? What the hell, right? So you get the narrative across all channels. How does it happen? All the BBG and all the USAGM has to do now is send out a memo to all channels. Have you ever done like a group email? Maybe, you know, send it like to a couple people. Okay. This group email goes to the heads of every network on the planet if it wants to. In the United States, every freaking station, the heads get the memo. This is the story. This is how it plays. This is what you're reporting on. This is national security. And that's why they came out with the same stories all the time. Same wording. And guess what? Best of all, same keywords used. Because it's driving it into your psyche. Same keywords. So this went on in South America from the turn of the millennium onward. And look at what it did. Look at what it did to you and people you know from 2015 onward. This is what it did. It works really well, especially on smart people. Now we're back to Brazil. Lula gets out of jail for being the biggest scumbag on the planet, most corruptible guy after Obama champions him to be head of the world's money fund. Yeah, that sounds about right. The most popular president in the world is Lula. And then Lula the next year is going to jail as the most corrupt bastard on the planet that sold his country out to French bankers, of all things. Yeah. Lula, to run for president, wasn't cleared like I'm innocent, you know, and I was, there's a miscarriage of justice. No. It was just wiped away so he could run. Oh, yeah, it happened, but hell, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And this brings us back to Pegassi's guy, the producer, Maximilian Arveles. He was known as the bag man in all this, running around with suitcases of money. Oh, come on. I mean, you know, what's easier? You know, you do a lot of graft or a little graft. You do a lot of graft, you use suitcases. Makes sense, right? Makes sense. That's what they were doing. He's actually got two confessions that he was doing these things involved. And guess what? Because he was with Pegassi, even though they had the confessions, he was never charged. So when this was starting to heat up, old Max got in line to be the ambassador to the United States, and Obama said, no, I don't want that guy here. You know, we've got, it's bringing the crime too close to the big seat where I am right now. Yeah, you know, you don't bring other criminals in. Well, as soon as Maduro started figuring things out, he recalled this guy. And you know what Arveles is? Well, Maduro, you know, Nicolas, it's been a great run, man. I'm not coming back. I'm going to go make movies instead. And, you know, I like that better right now. Thank you. Because he was about to be arrested. Now, this is Pegassi's partner right now. He moved up the food chain quite a bit. You're partners with a big banker now? Well, Lula and his election was somehow rigged. And you have a combination of information operations. and glitchy software. Yeah. And people that are dedicated to making it happen. Now, Lula wins. And the first picture is these men together looking like they know, and they want you to know that they just pulled this off. They're laughing at the people of Brazil. Two producers, the big banker, and of course, the newly installed leader of Brazil, Lula da Silva. Now, one of Lula's first meetings that he wanted to have and didn't get it when he wanted it was to have Nicolas Maduro come fly over and see me, man. We're friends. And Nicolas didn't show up. Maduro did not show up. And I hope that stays that way for a little while. They may entice Maduro in Venezuela to join the party by saying, hey, we'll get the sanctions lifted. We'll make you a normal, prosperous country again. Play ball with us now. Or we can stay like this forever. What do you think? What would you do? See, you're a leader of a country. It's not a matter of your personal pride. And, you know, I really don't care about the guy's politics at this point in the conversation because that's how they play. Get on board or get crushed. We'll crush you again. What do you think? So we'll see what happens with that. Now, we've discussed this before, and I want to make sure you understand that when I say that Argentina was captured, the whole COVID thing with the vaccine, who was sent with the negotiating teams, and Russia rejected it. They wanted nothing to do with these two producers being there. Argentina insisted on it because Matthew Pegassi runs the economics and financials in Argentina. And he had the power to send his people there to start trying to open up a market for corruption in Russia. Ultimately, all this has been about for Pegassi was to get into energy and businesses and minerals in Russia, to get into their financial system, to start corrupting it, to break the country. And that's where we are right now. Now, they have counterparts all over the place. So we're talking about a French banker, but the CEO of Blackstone votes for him, votes for Pegassi, nominates Pegassi to be the CEO of companies that he's investing in. And this is how close all these people work together. These energy clubs are no joke. You know, if you want to make real money, just join an energy club. If you can come up with the admission, you know, you have admission fee and dues, they don't lose money. They make tons of money, and that's the guarantee on it. Because they don't just hedge their bets on an investment. They control the ground, and they set it up to win at all costs, regardless of what happens in the country around them. It's not their business. It's not their country. And people like Pegassi, it's the same thing. He brags he doesn't own a house. He's not tied to anything. He's this, he's that, you know, rock star, whatever. If when you have that much access to that much wealth, that much power, what's worth more? Do you want to be able to go on vacation, you know, at Disney World? Or, you know, I can call the president of South Africa or Venezuela or Brazil, and, you know, we can go to their place. They don't know we're coming, but I'll set it up right now, and they'll entertain us for a week. What do you think? Not ask, but tell these leaders, this is what's going to happen. This is real power. This is part of globalization, and this is what globalization means. Every country loses their sovereignty, their rights as people, the validity of your nationality or your citizenship becomes worthless because it's owned by the corporation. And they may claim to be socialist, they may claim to be this, they may claim to be that. But I've got news for you. There isn't a bank on the earth that's socialist. They're all, well, they are, under Giovanni Gentile's definition. They're fascists. And fascist is fascist. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio. You have a great evening, and we'll see you tomorrow.